From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Nancy Pearl is a creative thinker about literacy and the importance of libraries and books. She's an author, a visionary librarian, and a dedicated reader. Welcome to Oregon Grapevine.
Thank you, Barbara. It's great to be here.
When Eugene built its library now 20 years ago, there were those who said books were dead and that independent publishers and bookstores were a thing of the past, and I'm still hearing that argument and belief. What is your vision for the future of books?
You know, I think the future of books is secure. I think that people will always need an escape, and there's no better way to escape than through the pages of a good book or listening to a good book. I guess what worries me, not so much about the future of books, but I think that we as librarians and library supporters have not always done continue not to do a really good job at explaining to the public why the public library or the school library is really the heart of the community. In many cases, public libraries have moved away from the traditional, have moved somewhat away from the traditional role of the library, which is to promote books and reading, to, the library is it's by its nature a social justice institution. It's the community center. It's the beating heart of its community. So books, I think that they might come to us in different formats we have ebooks and we have audio books, braille books for people who cannot read, see print. So I think they'll come in different ways and different packages, but I think the need for books is always going to be there.
I'd like to find out from you your feelings about whether, as you talk about the transition of books and the different versions of them, are people reading differently now, either over the years or specifically in these political times?
Two answers to that question. I think people during the pandemic, when libraries were closed and you couldn't actually go and pick up a physical book, I think that the circulation of both ebooks and audiobooks just quadrupled. Last year, I was talking to on a podcast with the director of the Miami-Dade Public Library System, and they circulated over 1 million ebooks in 2020. That's kind of unbelievable. So I think that people are reading and understanding reading differently than they have. The other answer to a different kind of way of looking at your question is that I think for a lot of people, what I've been hearing is that people are either really deliberately setting out to make themselves better educated about issues of racism, about critical race theory, what that means, of different ways of learning how to be a non-racist or an anti-racist, learning about the past in a way that perhaps they hadn't thought about before. So people are either going in that direction, or people are going in a direction of saying, the world is too much with me. I don't want to be here. Give me escapist fiction. And that's really interesting to me. What I found personally during the last year, year and a half, is that my taste for that kind of heavy nonfiction, I just don't have the emotional energy, I think, to devote to that the way I might have done 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And I know for me, I've been doing an awful lot of rereading, just going back to read favorite series, because I just want something familiar and something comfortable, kind of like putting on a really old, comfortable pair of jeans that you haven't worn in a few years that have sort of been hidden somewhere in your closet. And you just want the familiar. So, what about you, Barbara?
Well, I was going to say, between that and trash TV, I think we're good. What about me? I have always kind of tended towards fiction. I have people in my life who are very into some kind of heavy political tomes. I tend to hear their discussions about political tomes, don't necessarily read them, mostly about economics, right, usually, and the state of kind of that piece of the world. I myself tend toward either magazines or fiction, sometimes cozies.
Uh-huh.
So just to kind of, because I am the same way. The world is such a place where things are so heavy all the time. It's nice to not think about that for a minute.
Yes. But I did read a fabulous, I do read some nonfiction. I don't want to, you know.
Like, of course you do.
I don't want to be mean about myself. So I did read a fabulous nonfiction book that maybe your family and friends who read books about economics would be interested in this, and you would as well. It's called Having and Being Had, and it's by a woman named Eula Biss. Eulabiss. And it's an exploration of economics. It's an exploration of capitalism. It's an explanation of kind of moving economic class. She started writing the book when she and her husband bought their first washing machine, and what that meant not to have to go to a laundromat. But it's a book that on almost every single page, there were sentences, there were thoughts, that I wanted to highlight. It was a book that I read on an e-reader so I could underline so much of what was there. And it's so interestingly written. She's an adjunct professor at one or more of the Chicago schools. And I highly, highly recommend that book, Having and Being Had.
Thank you. I have actually read an essay or two, and I haven't thought about reading your book. So thank you very much. I will take that to heart.
Good.
As we talk about kind of current times and the issue of escapism versus not, there's kind of the issue of mental health, really, and how reading how reading fits into that. What do you think about that?
I think that readers make the world a better place, and I think that reading makes you as the reader a better person. I recently read an interesting quote from Neil Gaiman, who is one of my favorite writers when his books aren't too scary. And this is what he said: fiction gives us empathy. It puts us inside the minds of other people, gives us the gifts of seeing the world through their eyes. Fiction is a lie that tells us true things over and over. And I agree with every word of that quote. You know, I think that talking about mental health, and I think that this whole pandemic has really shown us what we're made of in a way. I think that we as human beings spend so much of our time inside our own heads. You know, we look at the world through those eyes that we have. And it's through reading that we get out of our own head. Do you know what I mean? That we, as Neil Gaiman said, we experience the world in a way differently from the way that we experience it. We become a fuller person, I think. You know, we become a better person because we are seeing the world from eyes other than our own. And I think that's so valuable. And I really can't think of another way of becoming more empathic, if that's the right word, or empathetic.
I think that's a great word.
Yeah.
Following up on that, Nancy, I know that, you know, certainly for my people, that my peers and the people I grew up with, and people of my of a certain age, as it were, and even slightly younger, although my kids do read quite a bit. I wonder, in your observation, whether reading is continuing to be something that young people are doing, not just children, which we can certainly get to, but young adults and teenagers and so on. Do you see them having real empathy and real connection with reading?
Now, I am a pessimist, so let me just start by saying that. I see a big drop-off of between kids reading and young adults reading, which worries me. We had our 18-year-old grandchild took a gap year before they started college, and they came to live with my husband and me, and they did not read one book in the 8 months that they were with us. And that was, and this is someone who's a reader who won the English prize at their high school when they graduated. And that was, it was so distressing to me. You can't say, oh, every teenager, every young adult is like that. But, and what Sarah did was they were on their phone all day reading news articles, reading Twitter, reading whatever, looking at Instagram, I don't know. But there was none of that sort of sitting and devoting an hour to reading a book. And God, Barbara, that was so hard for me.
Boy, if Nancy Pearl's grandchild is not reading a book, then I may join you in pessimism. I will say, if this is a note of optimism, I had kids who didn't read really very much, who are now in their 30s, who are voracious readers. They really are autodidacts, really, and studying a lot of things. So they did kind of go through a stage where they didn't read, and then mm-hmm. now they are reading. So maybe there's hope.
Yeah, and you know, I have to think back to, you know, I know I've been talking about the pandemic and, you know, the way we were a lot on this, you know, in this discussion with you, but my reading changed. There was so much going on. I mean, to read a book, to enter into a book, you have to not be distracted by the world. You know, there has to be like a give and take between you and the book where the real world is shut out for a time. And I think it's been really hard to shut out the real world. And I think I hear that from a lot of people. I think it's partly that. I think it's partly social media like Twitter, maybe to a lesser extent Facebook, but Twitter, where everything is in that, whatever, 188 characters, and there's not any of that concentrated attention that, you know, it's kind of, we've gotten out of the habit of that concentrated attention. And it happened to me. I mean, I felt like a fraud because I felt like, well, I'm not reading very much, and it's very hard for me to sit still for any amount of time, which is why I started listening to audiobooks, going for long, long, long walks every day, and then listening to audiobooks, which seemed to me to be a better way, an easier way for me to take in that information without sitting still.
Even though I read something that you said that reading audiobooks, listening to audiobooks is one thing, especially if they mispronounce a word. So
yes, yes. And then I have to say that whole thing was, it turns out it was the wrong word that I said that the
oh,
reader
dear.
Mispronounced. But I know, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to read, to do the audiobook for my novel, George and Lizzie, way back in 2017. And I know when we were, it's not tape anymore, but when we were recording the audiobook, there was an editor from Simon & Schuster who was on the line all the time listening to every sentence that I read and would correct me if my pronunciation was wrong. So you know, you do wonder why place names, for example, are so frequently mispronounced.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you for a minute, you know, the act of reading a book can be very visceral. It can be, judging a book by its cover, if you will, but oftentimes it's the feel of the cover, or it's the feel of the paper, or it's the experience of actually turning the pages that is part of the experience. And how do you kind of get past that part? I mean, are people finding, you know, I like ebooks for a lot of reasons and other things, but do you think that part of reading is going away or just changing?
I think it's changing. I totally agree with you that so much of reading is a visceral experience. It's the weight of the book and, you know, the sort of creaminess of the pages, the deckled edges of the pages. And you know, when you're holding a book in your hand and you sort of feel how much you've read, you know, where your thumbs are, how you're holding, how many pages are left, that's such it is visceral is a wonderful word to describe that. It is a visceral experience. It's an experience that you give up when you're reading an ebook or when you're listening to a book. And it's something that I miss. I mean, sometimes I think I can never read it. I never want to read another ebook. And then I think, oh, it's so darn convenient. And you can do that underlining and then you can easily go back to it and see what you've underlined. You can find things in it. But sometimes I just miss, and I do read, I guess I'm reading a little more as ebooks now because I'm not going to the library very much anymore because of COVID. But I do miss the physical book.
I don't miss the part, however, when I've checked out a book and someone has folded down the corner. I don't miss that.
Yes.
But,
or when somebody like has written, like, you know, look at page 80 or something.
Yes.
But when I was working as a librarian in Tulsa, I think it was that I always loved it when I didn't love it, but there we would see books, particularly Westerns, and particularly like the Westerns by Zane Grey, you know, where there are hundreds of them, and people would have made, like, pasted a list in the front of a library book of all the Zane Grey books and then would cross off the ones that they've read. I thought that was kind of nifty.
Mm-hmm, the interactive.
Don't do it. I'm not recommending it. Don't do it to a library book. But.
Oh, dear. Well, speaking of libraries, you know, they have become important gathering spots, even starting to reopen a bit, but certainly before COVID and again after COVID. And a lot of what they do, at least the Eugene Library and some other libraries I've seen, Portland, have turned into really social service agencies in a lot of ways. They're a place where people can go who don't have anywhere else to go. So what do you do with that? Where do you go with that? I mean, it makes librarians and library employees have to have a whole set of skills and understandings that really they may or may not be trained for.
Yeah, that I think librarians have always, public libraries have always risen to the occasion to work in the milieu that they've been placed. So, for example, when at the beginning of the 20th century, the first couple of decades of the 20th century, when all the immigrants were coming to the United States, librarians stepped up and did literacy, you know, taught English. People used the library to learn how to become an American. But libraries are not social service agencies. And the fact that they have become perforce a place where, as you said, people who have no other place to go. I think that means that our city governments, our county governments are really not stepping up to what they are responsible for. Librarians will, of course, take do the best for whoever comes through the door of the library. but they're not social workers, and they're not the medical profession. They can help people find what is needed, but they can't if those things are not available. And the cities need to step up to their, city governments need to step up to their responsibilities and not think that the library is the repository for people that they are unable to or unwilling to help. You know, it really, really, really makes me feel crazy that libraries are forced to do that, and that librarians are forced into jobs that they aren't trained for.
Nancy Pearl, the library activist, as well. We can add to your to your description. I agree. It's really hard to wonder where that's going to go. That's a whole different conversation, though, I think. But yeah. I really appreciate the insight, and I agree. Stepping to somewhat of a lighter note, but not necessarily, I'm wondering how we talked about kind of that blank space where some kids really are not reading so much, but you still read a lot, of course, about the importance of literacy, reading to small kids, reading to kids who are pre-literate, as it were, and just getting,
absolutely,
you know, a lot of that reading kids' books. How do you get kids friendly with books in hopes of nurturing that in this day and age, with libraries closed, with school librarians not really existing in a lot of places? What's the process for that?
You know, I still think that the best way to get children to love to read is to share that experience with their parents or with the adults in their lives. The picture that I always have is of a parent sitting next to a parent or the adult in the house sitting next to a child and reading with the child. I think that there's something so special about being read aloud to, and I think that we tend to stop doing that as soon as a child learns how to read for himself or herself, you know, and I was reminded that Michael Chabon, who I interviewed for a book called The Writer's Library, he has four kids who are now all in their late teens, early 20s, and he read to them, I think, through high school, and talked about the pleasures of sharing that experience. And so I think that reading with a kid, with a child, is something that just can't be beat. I would like to see schools begin to have a reading period, like a 10-minute reading period at the start of classes, so that kids can, or talking about books that they've read, not to make it seem like, you know, you have to read this book, but share a book that you've loved. I believe that any kid can love to read if we find a book that matches what they want. And I think the children's librarians, I think teen librarians, young adult librarians can do that. I think we just have to give them the chance. And I think teachers can do that as well. You know, so in some ways it goes back to how we teach English. You know, what are English, what are language classes these days? What do we give kids to read? I believe, Barbara, that when a child goes into a library, that he or she should be able to find themselves in the pages of a book and lose themselves in the pages of a book. And we have those books, and we're getting more every day.
Just a little piece of personal disclosure, since you asked earlier, in our adult lives, actually, my husband and I have gotten into reading each other books. We don't necessarily get audiobooks, although sometimes, but we've kind of tried to decide books that we want to read to each other, and it really is a whole, you read much slower, of course. You don't ever necessarily finish the book, but but it's an interesting experience to learn it that way.
It is. I mean, I think, you know, I was a late adopter of audiobooks. I never thought I would enjoy them because I tend not to take in information that way. But, oh, my goodness, I love the audiobooks that I love. And there is nothing better for my day than starting out with a long walk and listening to an audiobook. And it's a totally different experience than reading a book yourself if you're listening to it. I mean, this morning, I went for my walk. It was about 6:30, and I'm listening to re-listening and rereading a book by Georgette Heyer, who is one of my favorite people to listen. One of her books are some of my favorites to listen to. It's called An Infamous Army, and it's about Napoleon's defeat at Waterloo, a novel. And what could be better than that? So I think reading out loud and sharing that and listening, and as you and your husband do, is just wonderful.
Nancy, how do you, with just all the wealth and breadth of what is out there, how do you choose your reading, whether it's for pleasure or for work or for reading out loud, or just how do you do? Do you have books falling off shelves? Do you remember books? Do people write you? What do you do?
All of the above. I'm fortunate enough that publishers send me books that they love me to review. And, you know, I look at every one and I try to decide if I'm going to read it or not. And I'm also one of those sort of omnivorous readers. So basically, I'll read pretty much anything that is well-written and has characters that I find interesting. I don't like graphic violence, but I love thrillers. Boy, I did love thrillers. I loved the early Lee Child, Jack Reacher novels, maybe through book 10. I thought those were just great, and I reread those, but I won't listen to them because they're too violent to have that coming in through my ears. I mean, if you're reading about, if there's violence on the page, you can quickly turn the page and skip that part, which I think I've done. These days, I'm much less adventurous. I don't want any violence in my books, or I want all the violence. As you said, the cozy mysteries, you know, the murder in a teacup, off the page. There's a reviewer that I don't pay a lot of attention to book reviews, but I do pay attention to the Washington Post, two Washington Post book reviewers, Michael Durda, and especially Ron Charles. And if they're it's not even that I agree with both of them all the time. I just really respect what they have to say about the books that they review, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Do you have any final thoughts about any of it, reading or literacy or libraries or any kind of pieces of wisdom you want to pass on?
I think the greatest gift that you can give somebody is the gift of reading. And it was because of my librarians. I mean, the reason I became a librarian, the reason I'm such a proponent for public libraries and the people who work in them is because I grew up in a not particularly happy family and spent being at home didn't feel safe to me. And so I spent all my time at my local public library in Detroit, Michigan. And it was especially one librarian named Frances Whitehead, Miss Whitehead, who just gave me the gift of opening my world through the books she recommended to me. And when I met her, I was 8 or 9, and all I was reading was horse books, horse and dog books. And she would come up to me and she would say, "Nancy, I have a brand new Marguerite Henry book for you." Marguerite Henry, who wrote Misty of Shinko Teague and Sea Star, two of my favorite children's books at that time. And she would say, "Do you want to be the first person in this library to read those books?" Well, of course. I mean, who wouldn't want to be the first person to read a book that the library has just received? And you know, I would hold out my hand, you know, to get the books, the book that she was going to give me. And she would say, "This is my first experience of bait and switch." She would say, "Oh, but wait a minute, Nancy, before you read this book, why don't you read this book?" and she would give me Mary Poppins and The Hobbit and The Wind in the Willows. She was Canadian, so I got all of the British children's literature, the classic children's literature, Arthur Ransom, all of those books. But, you know, I mean, what a gift she gave me. And without Miss Whitehead in my life, you know, you and I would not be talking today. It was that major, the gift that she gave me. And we can give that gift to every child, and every child deserves that gift.
Thank you so much for your insight, and give a book.
Thank you, Barbara.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.